I don't want to spend much time this afternoon trying to set the context of the message, but I do feel that it's necessary to call your attention to some facts. But we'll be looking at some scripture in Hebrews, the 10th chapter, and verse 32, 33, 34, and 35. So in order for us to get the sense of these scriptures, I want to remind you that Paul has pleaded with the Hebrew people to provoke one another to love and to good works. This is the essence of his plea, and one of the things that they should do out of love, and that is a good work, is to assemble themselves. And Paul sees the congregation to whom he writes this letter threatened, because some have already abandoned the congregation and the assembly. Paul tells them they are to consider one another. That means that they were to take note of one another's circumstances and then to excite one another. He uses the word here to provoke, and it has in it the idea of creating excitement. And he forbids them to not forsake the assembly of themselves together, because it's a willful sin, and it brings a fearful looking for of judgment from Almighty God. And I think Paul now uses some other things to excite them not to forsake the assembly. And he does that by writing to them in verse 32, "But call to remembrance the former days." And I believe Paul very gently reminds them of the difficult times that they have already come through, and all the very difficult times that they've already endured in their Christian lives. You know, it's not as though these people had started out without any difficulty, as though they'd started out without any persecution or without any problems at all. They evidently had started their Christian life in the very midst of tribulation and suffering. And now perhaps they weren't even having that kind of difficulty. And Paul tells them to remember the former days. The word "former" has in it the idea of earlier, or the idea of sooner. Remember the way things were in previous days. And I think the intimation is, look at it from the viewpoint of the first days of this assembly, the first days of the congregation. Think about the time when you people first started meeting together, and consider the difficulties and the problems that you had. The first days following your initial commitment to Jesus Christ. In these days, they recognized and remembered that they had abandoned themselves to the Lord's work. And they were still very much in love with the Lord. Their first love was still intense and passionate. And Paul qualifies it by saying, "Those days in which ye were first illuminated," are illuminated. And this doesn't necessarily mean the time that they were saved, because this word doesn't mean to have your light lighted, but it means to have your light shine. So he's really saying the days when you were, the early days when you first began to illuminate others. It even has in it the idea of teaching. So it's not just the first few days when you were saved, but he's talking about evidently the congregation, when it had gone over that part of learning and had already begun to instruct and teach. So I think Paul is saying, I want you to remember the early days of this church, when there was a passion, when there was so much learning that you had not only been students, but now you've broken over that part of the Christian life, and now you're teaching other people. Remember how it was when you first began to instruct others. how exciting it was and how rewarding it was, not simply to be people who were receiving instruction, but you were people who were also giving light. And then he gives some specifics about the former days. He says, it was a time when you endured a great fight of afflictions. Not flight, F-L-I-G-H-T, but a great fight of afflictions. Endured, again, is a very common word, but it has a very strong meaning. It means to remain under the load, even after other people have begun to leave. So there is a closeness and a gathering together of those who are willing to remain under the load, to await to the very last, to wait the onslaught of things. It even has in it the idea of warfare. When other people have thrown down their weapons and abandoned the position, then there's a gathering together of those people who are going to stay and defend the position. Now they're together, now they've got their weapons, and they're the ones who are remaining under. They're the ones who are going to stay and make a defense. They're the ones that are going to stay and fight. And Paul said, you endured, you remained under a great fight. And it's a word that means combat. But it was a fight or combat of affliction. And it has in it the idea of suffering together. So, you people at one time, even though your suffering was tremendous, you stayed together, you bore up under the burden, and you endured. Paul said, I want you to remember these. These are the things I want you to think about. How difficult things were in the beginning. How really exciting things were in the beginning. How rewarding things were when you began to get the thing together and you began to teach other people and not just be young Christians who were taught. Then in verse 33, partly whilst you were made a gazing stock, both by reproaches and afflictions. The word that's translated gazing stock is the word we get theater from. What happens in the theater? Well, in the theater of this particular age that which we have the Bible given to us, people were put on a stage, and then people looked at them, laughed at them. They were the center of attention for whatever they did or didn't do. And Paul said, you people are as though you were in the theater. You are a gazing stock. You have been brought up on the stage. And that's kind of the way we'd have to look at ourselves as a congregation of people. We have been brought up on the stage. Now people are looking. They're seeing us. What are you going to do? What will be the next thing you do? What will be the next thing you don't do? But these people literally became the center of attention. People were watching them. They were a gazing stock. And because of that, they were then mocked. They were ridiculed. They suffered a great deal of just verbal abuse. The word reproaches means defamation of their character. They were accused of all kinds of wicked and vile things. The word affliction means pressure. They were under every kind of pressure that you could imagine. Paul said, I want you to remember, and I want you to remember that part of the things that you were suffering were angry words and cruel acts as you were put up on center stage and mocked and watched by the world. And then he said another part of your suffering was brought on because you made friends out of people who were suffering for the cause of Christ. And partly whilst you became companions of them that were so used. This word companion really means to share. You people were suffering partly because you came forward and shared the suffering of other people. And then he mentions that he was one of the persons that they shared his suffering. And because they shared in his suffering, then they themselves were made to suffer. For he writes in verse 34, "For ye had compassion of me in my bonds." And this word compassion is sympathy. You had sympathy for me, and you were affected in a very dramatic manner when you saw me in my bonds, which are bands or chains that are used to put on criminals to keep them in place or to keep them from escaping. So Paul is reminding them that they saw him in bands, they saw him in chains, they saw him as a captured criminal, and they could have just stood back and not identified themselves with him, but they rushed to his side and they came to his aid, and therefore they shared in the sufferings of Paul. And notice, "and took joyfully the spoiling of your goods." The word "joyfully" here has in it the idea of joy. We get the word "grace" from it. It comes from the same particular word, charis or charod. It has in it the idea of joy. And spoiling, we've seen the Kuwaiti people as they've gone to their homes and spoken to the television reporters of how people came into their homes and carried off everything that they had. When the attack helicopters destroyed hundreds of vehicles going north on a 6-lane highway out of Kuwait City, it showed these vehicles just crammed with all kinds of clothing and household items of just every description. These Iraqi troops evidently were going to take all this spoil home with them. They had spoiled the city of Kuwait City. This is what this word means. It means one of two things. Either the government, because of your being disenfranchised, could legitimately come in and take away all of your land and your holdings, or mobs running rampant in the city could just force themselves into your home without any legal protection and take everything that you've got. But these people's material possessions had been stripped from them. They'd been plundered, and the people who did the plundering were applauded as though they were doing a good thing. They cheerfully submitted to the violent seizure of their goods. Paul said you had a certain knowledge that kept you filled with anticipation and filled with even joy in the midst of all of the spoiling of your goods. And that is knowing in yourselves, knowing down deep inside, having this knowledge down deep inside, that you have in heaven a better and enduring substance, a better property. Paul said your goods were spoiled here, but you endured the spoiling of your goods here because you knew down deep inside that in heaven you have a lot better substance than what these things were made out of. So it shows they had faith. They had faith that these are just things that people are taking from us, and we have something of far greater value, and that will endure forever and ever, and the things that we have can't be taken from us because they are in heaven. A better property, and one which you would keep forever. In other words, the idea is it'll never be stripped from you. It'll never be spoiled. You'll never have to endure its being taken. Now, Paul said, you were, you have been, you have endured, you've accomplished, you have been center stage and everything that people could do to you. They have done, and you accepted it, and you came out victorious. Now, you know what he's going to say now, don't you? We give the same advice. We tell someone, look, you've already been through all this. You've already endured all of this. All you've got is just now. Don't throw away all the stuff that you've got. Don't quit right now. It's not time to quit. Now's the time to go on. And because you've already fought the major battles. And that's what he says in verse 35. Cast not away, therefore, your confidence. Don't throw away. This word confidence is boldness. It might be translated fearlessness, your bold confidence. What had happened? Well, these people were getting timid. They were getting reserved. They were getting doubtful. They were wondering, does it really amount to anything? Have I really accomplished anything? Am I really getting anywhere? And I don't suppose that's much of an unusual ground for God's people. And I imagine all of us think that from time to time as we look at ourselves and look at the world and look at what we do. And boy, we've put a lot of time and energy into something. And we're thinking, is it worth putting any more time and energy into? Is it worth, why don't we just walk away from it, let it cave in, and forget the whole thing? Paul is saying, don't do that. You laid a foundation. You suffered, you endured, you built, you got to a point. Now things are not maybe what you thought they would be, but don't cast away, don't throw away what you've already accomplished, because what you've already accomplished through this great boldness that you possessed, which has in it the idea of faith and courage, God will give a great reward for that kind of efforts. It has, as Paul writes here, great recompense of reward. And this word means full payment. To pay the full price for anything. To give complete and total wages. Total compensation. And he's saying, what you've done, God will give a significant and full paycheck for it. So don't jeopardize the things that have already been accomplished by bailing out and forsaking the assembly right now. You know, hardly be more appropriate words for us than these words this afternoon. Some of you were here from the very beginning when there was just some swamp land here, and it was cleared away and field dirt hauled in, and then there were hours and hours and days and months of long, hard work. And many times people, the early families, despaired. Early in the ministry of the church, you know, there were setbacks, and not a lot. It really went better than most churches from the viewpoint of certainly the fellowship and all. But there's been a tremendous amount of really hard work done, and there's been a lot of good accomplished, and yet we're not hardly 25 years old as a congregation of people, which is relatively young. So now we've come to this part of it. Now we've come to this place. What do we do now? And I don't think any of us know. But we know one thing, and that is we don't want to quit. We don't know exactly what. We don't know exactly where. There's one thing we know, that we're not going to abandon the meeting of ourselves together. And we're not going to say, we've come this far, we don't know what to do, so we might as well quit. We don't feel that way. We're just at a growing stage. We're just at a point where we're at a plateau. We're at a place where we can grow spiritually and internally, and grow together for perhaps a greater work for God. So times of testing came to this church when they were so discouraged that they were almost ready to abandon the thing out of discouragement more than anything else. Because you know it takes more faith to work your way through discouragement than it does open opposition. When they were hounded and spoiled, they had their faith. But once these things sort of lessened and slacked, and there was a period of reprieve and reprival, then things begin to sort of bear on their mind. Paul said, you've done it once, you can do it longer. Don't cast it away. Don't throw it aside. And that's true of individuals and churches and just about everything you want to think of. How many times have we been close to giving up in many things and yet have struggled on and then seen that to have given up would have been a bad mistake? We need to learn, as Paul encouraged these people, to remember the former days, what price was paid for getting where you are. And then, as you think of these things, don't just throw away what you've been able to accomplish because of discouragement.